Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo
Bhagavate
Vasudevaya
Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations, Text 31. Nandam cha mokshati vaya varunasya asha gopan kineshu kinitan mayasununa cha Agni apritam nishi shayanam atishramena lokam vikuntam upanishati gokulam
asma.
Nandam cha mokshati vaya varunasya pashat Gopan vileshu bihitan mayasu nunacha Ahnya pritam nishishayana patishramena Lokam vikuntam upaneshati gokulam sma Nandam cha mokshati vaya varunasya pashad Gopan vileshu bhitan mayasu mayasu nunacha Nyapritam nishishayana matishramena Lokam vikuntam upaneshati gokulam sma Nandam cha mokshati vaya varunasya pashad Gopan vileshu bhitan mayasu nunacha Ahnya pritam nishishayana matishramena Lokam vikuntam upaneshati gokulam sma
Thank you.
Ladies. Sleeping soundly at night because of their hard labor in the day, Lord Krishna awarded promotion to the highest planet in the spiritual sky. All these acts are transcendental and certainly prove that without any doubt, all these acts are transcendental and certainly prove without any doubt is God. Nanda Maharaj, the foster father of Lord Krishna, went to take his bath in the river Yamuna in the dead of night, mistakenly thinking that the night was already over. Thus the demigod Varuna took him to the Varuna planet just to have a look at the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, who appeared there to release his father. Actually, there was no arrest of Nanda Maharaj by Varuna, because the inhabitants of Vrindavan were always engaged in thinking of Krishna in constant meditation on the personality of Godhead in a particular form of samadhi or trance of bhakti yoga. They had no fear of the miseries of material existence. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that to be in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by full surrender in transcendental love frees one from the miseries inflicted by the laws of material nature. Here it is clearly mentioned that the inhabitants of Vrindavan were extensively busy in the hard labor of their day's work. And due to the day's hard labor, they were engaged in sound sleep at night. So practically, they had very little time to devote to meditation or to other paraphernalia of spiritual activities. But factually, they were engaged in the highest spiritual activities only. Everything done by them was spiritualized, because everything was dovetailed in their relationship with Lord Sri Krishna. The central point of activities was Krishna. And as such, the so-called activities in the material world were saturated with spiritual potency. That is the advantage of the way of Bhakti Yoga. One should discharge one's duty on Lord Krishna's behalf, and all one's actions will be saturated with Krishna thought, the highest pattern of trance and spiritual realization. Om again, Jimananasya, Gananjana Shalaka, Chakshumadikamiya, Tasmai Sri Kudave Namaha. We should remember that these verses are coming from Lord Brahma, and he's speaking to Narada Muni. Today's verse gives you some capsule of events in Vrindavan. Lord Brahma has been responding to questions by Narada Muni several chapters ago, in which Narada Muni wants to know some truths about spiritual knowledge as well as how the material world runs. He asked his father, tell me please about the relationship between the individual soul and the supreme soul. Tell me please how this material world is created. Tell me please, are you the all in all? Or is there someone more powerful than you? Because you're so powerful, everything that is known by you because you're the creator of this material world. Yet I see that you're performing austerities and meditating on someone else. Therefore, I'm inspired to inquire from you. And what was Lord Brahma's response? First of all, he thanked Narada Muni. You, he said, have been merciful upon all of us because you are asking questions about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada, in the purport, explains a very important point that Brahma's response is showing us the basic feelings of missionary activity. Missionaries have feelings. Krishna conscious preachers, they have emotions. And the prime characteristic of their emotion is that they are very happy to have a chance to glorify Krishna. This is what we're aspiring for. And even though in our beginning stages we may not feel that joy at just being given a chance to glorify Krishna, certainly we want to strive for that platform. The order of the spiritual master can be taken simply as, well, he orders, therefore I must do. But it is much better if it's taken with a joyful spirit. That I'm so happy to be Krishna's servant. I'm so happy to be the servant of Krishna's devotees. In this way, the natural joy of the soul in connection to Krishna can more easily revive itself. But when there's a grudging attitude, oh, they say we got to do this, therefore we have to do it. Someone's ordering me to do this, therefore I have to do it, otherwise I won't be able to stay around here, or I won't have my situation the way I want, so I have to do it. That is not at all the best kind of bhakti. For those devotees who want to advance in spiritual life, we should pray to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, please, just like Lord Brahma, let me be joyful upon getting an opportunity to glorify Krishna. Narottam Das Thakur has the answer for how devotees should deal with their emotions. Sometimes there's some new mystery that suddenly we have emotions and what to do with them. But there's no mystery in the eyes of the acharyas. Everything is explained if we simply study their words, we'll see it's all there. Narottam Das Thakur gives a complete rundown on what to do with your emotions. Krishna Seva Karmarpane. You use your lust to engage everything in Krishna's service. Whenever you see good management, you'll see that lust. This should be for Krishna. That should be for Krishna. This should be done very nicely for Krishna. That should be organized so nicely for Krishna. It is the perfection of lust to think like that. And that's what Narottam Das Thakur has asked for. We don't say no lust. We say no lust for our sense gratification. But we want to intensely lust to make arrangements for Krishna's pleasure. And anger. There's room for anger in devotional service. We become angry when Krishna and Krishna's devotees are offended. And of course, sometimes we become angry at ourselves because we see dirty things in our heart. We see envy, jealousy, all sorts of things that impede our service. So we also get angry at ourselves sometimes. And greed is also used in the service of the Lord. Narottam Das Thakur says, a devotee is greedy to glorify Krishna. Whenever there's an opportunity to hear and chant the glories of the Lord, that's how the devotee manifests the greed. And this is what Lord Brahma is saying to Narada Muni. I'm greedy to answer your questions. Thank you. You've incited my greed to glorify Krishna. In this way, you've done good for all of us. You'll find the same thing in Shukadeva Goswami when he hears the question of Prince Maharaj. What is the best thing for a person to do in all circumstances? And especially, what is the best thing for someone to do at the time of death? And Shukadeva Goswami, before answering, you'll find that right at the beginning of this second canto, he says, Bhariyane Shate Prasna Kitam Lokahitam Nirva. Your question is glorious. It is beneficial for all kinds of people. And it is approved by all transcendentalists. So throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, you can feel this enthusiasm in both the person who asks the questions and the person who answers the questions. They are both enlivened by the fact that Krishna is being discussed, Krishna is being glorified. We should remember that in our service, we're getting such a rare opportunity to contribute to the spreading of Lord Chaitanya's glories. Problems in devotional service come when we take our service as just routine, ordinary. We have a grudge attitude. But if we can see how, directly or indirectly, we are expanding Krishna's glories, then your greed has its perfect outlet. Then the greed of the spirit soul to glorify Krishna can manifest. And it just takes some practice and some prayer. We have the deities here, so you can pray every day. Please let me feel that greed to glorify. Please let me feel that lust to arrange everything for your pleasure. In this way, Narottam Das Thakur, he gives you the perfect emotional formula. How you can use your emotions for Krishna's pleasure. Narada Muni respectfully inquired from his father, Brahma. And Brahma is answering several chapters. And he's discussing the Vrindavan pastimes in answer to Narada Muni's queries about the complete truth. Narada Muni is going to hear about Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. Lord Krishna saved his foster father Nanda Maharaj from the fear of the demigod Varuna. So what happened? Those of you who have read Krishna book, you know that it was Ekadasi and Nanda Maharaj properly celebrated Ekadasi, and therefore on Dwadasi he wanted to take a bath. He felt he was following all the Vedic technicalities very perfectly. The problem was he chose to take his bath at a moment which could be a little bit earlier than the precise technical Vedic injunctions allow. Actually, the Acharyas say that it wasn't wrong, but it could appear to be wrong. But if you get into the technicalities, it could be that it was right. In any case, Nanda Maharaj, as a resident of Vrindavan, he's the goal of Vedic knowledge, in that he's achieved perfect association with Krishna. Therefore, what he's doing is the goal of Vedic knowledge. His love for Krishna is far beyond Vedic technicalities. Still, this pastime shows you that there is such intricacy in living, and this is what we protest about people's behavior and their so-called civilization today. The ignorance is so thick. Even though they talk so much about spirituality, and they even talk about the soul, still, when you look at their activities, you see they have no understanding that they are enmeshed in an intricate network of action and reaction. And you cannot do what you like. You must find out how Krishna wants us to live. People have a hard time understanding that. They feel a false sense of freedom in material existence. And Prabhupada makes the basic point that action without real freedom has basically no meaning. As long as you are acting under the gun of material nature, there's no freedom. Therefore, how can your life be meaningful? But you see, under the influence of Maya, people feel meaning in their life, although they have no freedom. This is the glory of Maya. Prakate kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa ahankara vimuthatma kataha mityumanyate. We all know that verse. The bewildered spirit soul, acting under the influence of material nature, under the gun of material nature, thinks I'm the doer, when actually the living entity is being pushed around by material nature. So in that enslaved condition, we still feel my life has meaning, I have independence, I have creativity. And this prevents us from understanding what Dharma is. Now, we should stop and think. Dharma does not simply refer to your life in the spiritual realm. What people have a hard time understanding, it's like last night we were discussing barriers to reading Bhagavad Gita. Subhasaru was mentioning that his favorite day of the Gita distribution is coming up. And so we are inspired to discuss why sometimes people feel that Bhagavad Gita is not for them. Sometimes they even buy the book, and without further motivation by devotees, they'll keep the book on their shelf. They feel that way. One reason I noticed is that when they open the first chapter and they see the Vedic codes for living in this world, they can't at all understand how that would apply. Now, they try to make it to be the fault of Bhagavad Gita. Oh, it's talking about a different world. I even heard some devotees say that the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita is totally unnecessary. You might as well just chop it off. I've heard devotees say that. I started thinking why it is that sometimes devotees say that, and why sometimes first comers to Bhagavad Gita, they get that impression. What's all this stuff in the first chapter about kshatriyas and honor and duty? I know why they say like that. Because they have no concept that even in the material world, your life is totally bound by Dharma. You cannot do your own thing even in the material world. You see, people may start to concede, yes, when we become spiritually pure, then we're completely bound up by Krishna. But in the material world, you just have to sort your life out as best as you can. No, that's not what Bhagavad Gita is presenting. Bhagavad Gita is presenting that in the spiritual world and in the material world, your life is totally prescribed. Oh, this is horrible sounding to someone in the Western so-called civilization. And life is totally prescribed. It sounds so unattractive. Everything that I do is regulated by Vedic injunction. For example, in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, considering your specific duty as a kshatriya, I don't see any better thing for you to do than to fight. So Krishna is not speaking on the spiritual platform here. He's talking about material reality. In other words, looking at your material reality, you're still bound to act in a certain way. You have to follow certain patterns of behavior, because that is human life. You are a kshatriya, considering that, how you are, you must fight. So Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita on the platform of spiritual obligation as well as material obligation. And this is what makes Bhagavad Gita so powerful. And sometimes people, they can't handle it because they're not willing or they haven't been trained to look in themselves and see why they're rebelling. Why they think Bhagavad Gita is inaccessible. Why do they have these notions? It's our duty as servants of Prabhupada to assist the people in plunging into the nectar of his books. That's ecstatic service for us, rather than just taking the easy way out. Well, the books, they're a little bit difficult to understand these days. Maybe back in the 70s when things were different, people could read Bhagavad Gita, but now it's different. And no, what we simply require now is the enthusiasm we had back then. And then the people, they'll feel inspired to open the books. When the devotees are inspired about the books, the people become inspired. So the devotees should see it, that, okay, the people may have had different misconceptions in the 70s than they have now, but still, the people always have misconceptions. This gives us a chance to serve Krishna's pure devotee by aiding the people in reading Prabhupada's books. That's service for us. And if we overlook that opportunity by saying, well, maybe it's just that there's something else needed these days, we are deprived of very precious, intimate service to Srila Prabhupada. So it's fun understanding that these books have the perfect satisfaction for people, but they need our help to see that. That gives us service, and we become so enlivened to distribute the book and then inspire the people to read the book. In this way, we become more inspired to taste what is in the book. So understand that people have this aversion to seeing how everything is regulated and controlled in Vedic culture. They can't conceive of that, how even material life is prescribed for the purpose of spiritual elevation. In the 18th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, yajna dana tapa karma nachajam karyam evata. There are three things that cannot be given up even by the great souls. Yajna, sacrifice, dana, charity, and tapa, austerity. These three things have to be there if there's going to be understanding of Krishna. In explaining this verse once, Srila Prabhupada explained that each of these three things applies specifically to the various ashrams. And without these things present in the ashrams, brahmachari, vihasta, vanaprastha, sannyas, then it is not possible to understand Krishna conscious philosophy, he said. So, yajna. Yajna is specifically appropriate to the brahmacharis, although obviously everybody is connected to yajna in proper human society. But specifically the brahmacharis have the job to assist in yajna. They're meant to rise early, study the Vedic literature, and take part in sacrifices for the glorification of the Lord. And of course we know what the prime sacrifice of the age of Kali is. So that is supposed to be brahmachari life. A brahmachari without yajna is not a brahmachari. He's got to demonstrate that I am participating in sacrifice to Vishnu, yajna by Vishnu. And Prabhupada wanted organized sacrifice for Vishnu. Therefore, a brahmachari has to show that I'm rising early, I'm studying the Vedic literature, and my whole day is characterized by my being enmeshed in an organized effort to perform yajna for the Lord. Then charity, dana. Prabhupada explained that a householder is not a householder without charity. He must give. Otherwise, it is not grihastha life. He must always be seen to be giving, giving, giving. Perhaps it could be said that in the Western culture, time is also money. So a householder, if he cannot give money, certainly has to give something. He can give time. But without giving something, without constantly giving charity, you don't have bona fide household life. You must give something. And then, tapa, austerity. The sannyasis and vanaprasthas have to be characterized by austerity. That means the voluntary acceptance of inconvenience for a higher purpose. As soon as sannyasis simply try to suit themselves, they fall down. It seems like they have a lot of independence, but no, it's a very thin line. They have to be constantly praying to Srila Prabhupada and the deities. Is what I'm doing just to suit myself, or is this for Krishna's pleasure? As soon as the sannyasi gives up that constant prayer, then life becomes difficult very quickly. So Prabhupada's point was that everything about genuine human life has regulation and prescription. Our problem is we don't want to see it in that way. And we even let this aversion creep into our Krishna conscious affairs. We're basically averse to prescription, regulation, duty, but still we want to believe in Krishna and roam the free skies of pure spirituality. It doesn't work like that. If we're at all going to be purified, we have to conform to at least some basic standard. So I like that verse that Prabhupada utilized to point out how simple it is to get everybody to do what they're supposed to be doing. It doesn't require any intricate Vedic injunctions and technicalities. Brahmachari, where's your yajna? Householder, where's your charity? Sannyas, where's your tapak? Where's your austerity, your voluntary accepting of inconvenience? Immediately, everything falls into place. And Prabhupada pointed out, without these things, you cannot understand the Krishna conscious philosophy. Now, Nandavaraj, he's beyond Vedic technicalities. He happened to perhaps venture into the Yamuna water at the wrong time. And he had the best intent, of course. He's absorbed in pure love of Krishna. Devotees pray. Some people like to study the Vedas and Upanishads. Others like the Mahabharata. I'm simply praying to Nanda Maharaj because in his backyard, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is crawling on hands and legs. So that is Nanda Maharaj's exalted position. Yet, when he went into the water of the Jamuna, at what might be the wrong time, a demoniac servant of Varuna arrested him. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj's fellow cowherd men, they saw him enter the water of the Jamuna, but they did not see him come out. So they became very alarmed, and they went and told Krishna. Krishna immediately understood what was happening, automatically. And he went to the kingdom of Varuna, and there he saw Varuna and Nanda Maharaj. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Varuna had Nanda Maharaj seated on the throne. Varuna was aware of Nanda Maharaj's position. So Krishna approached, and immediately Varuna said, "Please forgive my ignorant servant." The Shastra, the Bhagavatam, actually says that that servant of Varuna was demoniac. How dare him arrest the father of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You can see, even in demigod life, even in the realm of the demigods, someone can act demoniac. Someone can act in a demoniac way. The material world is like that. You cannot have an intoxicated sense of idealism that everyone in this world, even in the demigod platform, is going to do things right. No, the propensity for misuse is always there. Therefore, Varuna had a servant who acted in a demoniac way. Yet, Krishna was above the whole situation and used it all for his purposes. And Varuna actually knew, regardless of what my foolish servant has done, I wanted to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What were Varuna's first words to the Supreme Lord after begging forgiveness for his servant? He said, "Now my body has achieved its purpose. Because I am seeing you. My body has now achieved its perfection that it's meant for. And furthermore, I have achieved the goal of life." Immediately, Varuna is letting every human being know what is the purpose of life. You have a body, it's for seeing the Supreme Personality of God. You have artha, you have a goal in life, that is attaining the status of service to the Supreme Lord. And then he commented on Krishna's purity. He said, "Even though the illusory energy emanates from you, you're not contaminated by it." In this way, he took full advantage of getting the presence of the Supreme Lord. And then, of course, the Lord took his father, Nanda Maharaj, back out of Varuna's kingdom. And naturally, Nanda Maharaj, he has his community. So he was discussing with all the older cowherd men what happened. And they were amazed. You mean Varuna was treating your son Krishna like that? They began to speculate, maybe your son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nanda Maharaj is just thinking, I guess Varuna realizes my son is so wonderful. But the other cowherd men were pointing out, maybe he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so then, they all had a desire. Yes, he could be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maybe he'll show us what our destination is in the spiritual world. Then Krishna could understand what they were desiring. So the Lord immediately arranged to show the cowherd men their destination. He took them to a lake and immersed them in the lake. And when they came out of the lake, they had seen the topmost areas of the spiritual world. They saw the Brahmajyoti, they saw Vaikuntha, but they also saw Krishna Loka. In fact, they saw Vrindavan. So when they came out of the water, the cowherd men are thinking, wow, the spiritual world, the ultimate destination is just like where we're living now. It looks just like where we are. And Krishna's there, and he's near with us, so, okay. In this way, by the potency of the Yoga Maya, they were allowed a vision momentarily that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, but then they were covered over by Krishna's personal potency. This is another point we should find interesting. In any condition of life, we are bewildered. Either we are bewildered by Mahamaya, or we're bewildered by Yoga Maya. So in this case, to maximize their intimate love for Krishna, the cowherd men, they rarely allow to see that Krishna is God. But sometimes, just to, for the fun of the pastime, the Lord lets the cowherd man or even Mother Yashoda start thinking maybe our son is something else. You know the verses in Nectar Devotion, how Mother Yashoda explains that, how is it that my son could kill Putana and other demons? It must be because Nanda Maharaj and I were performing proper worship of the demigods or something like that, pious activities. Otherwise, how could our son kill these demons? And how was it that the Yamuna Arjun trees were knocked down? Obviously, it was because of a strong wind. And what about this lifting of Govardhan Hill? Mother Yashoda said, I don't think that Krishna lifted it. Obviously, it was Nanda Maharaj holding the hill up all the time. So this shows how Krishna's intimate relations, they simply think he's our Krishna. They don't think he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They think they are superior to Krishna. We have to feed Krishna. We have to bathe him. We have to protect him. In this way, they can show that Vatsalya Rasa, love of God and parental love for the Supreme Lord, and the Lord relishes it very much. The other pastime here that Brahma is mentioning to Narada is about Vyomasura. He is the last demon to die in Vrindavan before Krishna goes to Mathura. Narada Muni had already agitated Kamsa into action, and so Kamsa had prepared a whole scene for killing Krishna in Mathura. But just as a last effort, Kamsa sent two more demons to Vrindavan, Keshi and Vyomasura. So Keshi died, and as soon as Keshi was killed by the Lord, Narada Muni came before Krishna in Vrindavan and began to forecast all of Krishna's Mathura and Dwarka pastimes. He said, I'm going to see this, my Lord, and I know I'm going to see that. I'm going to see you drive the chariot of Arjuna in the battle of Kurukshetra. I'm going to see you with the thousands of wives in Dwarka. All these things I'm going to see. And then, after Narada Muni made his forecast, Krishna was playing with his cowherd boyfriends in the forest, having a good time, complained that some Howard boys were the thieves and others were the law enforcement officials, and there was stealing of the calves, and the law enforcement was trying to recover the calves. And then Vilma Sura shows up disguising himself as a cowherd boy, and he starts stealing cowherd boys and locking them up in a cave and sealing the door to the cave with a stone. He practically gets down to only four cowherd boys left for Krishna, and that's when Krishna does something. Krishna knows everything, but beyond knowing everything is enjoyment. So Krishna is using the demon how to have fun. So Krishna notices, look, there's only four cowherd boys left. Where are all the others? This guy must be a demon. Krishna grabs him, and as soon as Krishna grabs Vilmasura, he turns into a huge demon, revealing his form. All of Kansa's wizards had the ability to change their form at will, but whenever Krishna would grab them, they would change back into their original form, just like Putana. She couldn't maintain her illusion as a beautiful woman when Krishna was killing her. She changed into a hideous demon. Similarly, this Vyomasura revealed himself as a huge demon as Krishna was killing him. Krishna grabbed him and threw him on the ground with such force the demon lost his life. The acharyas also add that Krishna might have been strangling him too. Killing is fun for Krishna. So when he kills the demons, he shows all aspects of his enjoyment. In this way, we get a complete picture of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, dancing with the gopis, killing the demons, and we can have a full meditation. In this way, our consciousness becomes more and more attractive to Krishna. That is why the Lord appears within this material world, to give you something to think about. As the verse says, all these acts are transcendental and certainly prove without any doubt his godhood. In other words, Krishna's prowess doesn't depend on the kind of body he has. Our abilities depend on our body. When we're a baby, we can't do the things we do when we're an adult. But Krishna can display the power of the infinite Godhead in any form, as a baby, as a teenager, as half man, half lion, as a fish, as a tortoise. It doesn't matter for Krishna. His body is always completely spiritual and without limitation. But when we, as individual souls, take a material body, we are subject to the limitations of those bodies. So those who are fascinated with bodies, they should become fascinated with the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any questions? All glories to the Lord.